So while my presentation is loading, my name is Mary Merrill, and I'm a staff attorney at the Public Health Law Center along with Natasha and Julie, and you'll be hearing from Julie a little bit later. And the areas of focus that I'm going to be talking about today have to do with what we can do as the public health community to increase access to healthy food in for low-income populations and specifically hunger relief efforts. So my interest in this area is, this is a newer area that we've been working on at the Public Health Law Center, and some of my interest in this comes from the past 20 to 30 years when I worked in social service agencies, at homeless shelters, different emergency food relief providers, and then also I worked as a legal aid attorney for a number of years before I started working on policy efforts and public health. And really was struck by the challenges that my low-income clients and others that were seeking support due to a wide range of challenges that they were experiencing in their personal lives, and just the struggles to survive, find housing, medical care, and healthy food is really sometimes not what people are thinking about. You just want to fill your stomach, have a place to sleep, and make sure that your kids are safe. And but I think that as we've been learning as a public health community, that nutrition and healthy food is so important for the least advantaged members of our society, and that we need to figure out how we can support health and nutrition even as we are providing for the basic needs. And so while the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Programs provide a lot of resources for needy families and individuals, it isn't enough. And I don't think, you know, when I've been doing some research looking at the background of SNAP, going back to AFDC and, you know, decades ago, there was never an intention that SNAP benefits and these government benefits would meet all of the nutritional needs of the people that were receiving those. But I think that more and more people are having this idea that this really is kind of the safety net, that this is the government benefit that it's going to feed families, except that it's not enough. And so families, individuals, have to seek other sources of food and nutrition for their families and for themselves. And food shelves, different kinds of emergency shelters, meal programs, there's a whole host of private entities that are trying to fill that gap, and there's a lot of stress with that as people become drop off of eligibility for SNAP in the ebbs and flows of the political climate and what kind of resources are made available for SNAP benefits. And also I think that there's a lot of complicated aspects to an individual seeking out SNAP benefits or even going to a food bank or a food shelf to access food. And so trying to figure out how can we support individuals and give them healthy food so that they can be productive in their lives and move beyond hopefully what is a temporary crisis, but unfortunately it is a longer term situation for folks. And one of the things in our work, Natasha was talking about it, and I think that our focus is really talking about how can we increase access to healthy food. But one of the things that really interests me as well is when we start these kinds of social initiatives, like we're really talking about a cultural change in shifting our preferences with food away from more processed foods and some of these unhealthier foods that are causing so many of the chronic health diseases that we're struggling with as a society, what are the unintended consequences of that effort? And what concerns me is that the unintended consequences could be, and maybe this would be someone who wants to do a research study, is how if there's an increase in people seeking out, like paying customers, seeking out healthier foods, what happens to the unhealthy food that is still part of our food system, and where is that going? And is our effort to increase access to healthy food and people's consumption patterns in a certain part of our society inadvertently leading to greater donations of unhealthy food to food shelves and to other kinds of social service agencies that are providing low-income residents food and providing that kind of safety net for folks? And so I think it's just important for us to think about that and think about how we can collectively address that and be cognizant of some of, you know, how our efforts could impact some of the the most vulnerable people in our society. So for sources of food, for food shelves and I guess I should clarify different terminology. I think in different states, people talk about things in different ways. So in Minnesota, we talk about there's a food bank that's kind of a hub or an aggregate place, a warehouse kind of place for it that brings in big donations of food. And then the food bank distributes food to the smaller food shelves, and then the food shelves distribute the food directly to the clients. I think in some states it's called food pantries. Is there other terminology that people have heard of? Anyway, depending on where you are, there's a different terminology, and I'm sure that there's probably other terms that are used as well. So when I say food shelf, I'm talking about the social service provider that is distributing food directly to the low-income individual or family, and the food bank is kind of the aggregate distribution center for the food shelves. And so there's two key areas of food that food banks and food shelves where they receive their food, and one is private donations, and then there are some donations made through the federal government, and perhaps some states also may have some food distribution services. I'm not as familiar with that. But those are the two key areas or ways that different social service agencies receive food that then they distribute to low-income individuals. And one of the things that we're finding is that as people in the hunger relief community and social service agencies are hearing from their clients that they are also interested in having fresh produce, dairy, lean protein. You know, like there is a demand for clients of these social service agencies to have healthier food, even though it is harder for them to get that. And so some of these social service agencies are trying to look at alternate ways of getting food and how to serve these needs. And one of the things that's happening is, and it's a real learning curve right now, where there are legal and policy barriers that end up derailing some efforts or complicating some of the efforts of social service agencies to provide these healthier foods, or as they're trying to think of different kinds of distribution models to get healthier food to their clients. And so I'm going to talk through a few of those that we've been encountering in our work at the Public Health Law Center, and it's kind of a snapshot. I feel like this area really is kind of a new and emerging area, and there's a lot of lessons that we are learning and that are still we're still trying to figure out. But if there's one overriding lesson I think that is good to keep in mind, is just as if you're thinking about trying to come up with a new system or a new way of food distribution for low-income individuals, it's really important to understand the legal context, both at the local and the state level, because there are ways that local and state laws can impact those efforts in that you just might not anticipate. And so it's just good to ask those questions, and hopefully talking through some of these examples will give you an idea of how some of those issues might come up. So one of the first areas where we've been doing a fair amount of work is that there's this new, I don't know how new it is actually, but there's this movement to shift from more of a bricks and mortar food shelf operation to mobile food shelves. So basically putting the operations on wheels, it provides more flexibility, it reduces some of the overhead costs for a building, and it provides more of an ability for food shelf operations to go directly to communities that may not have access to healthy food, for people that may be homebound or have other needs where they can't actually get to the food shelf. I'm not sure if any people here have worked with food shelves. Are people familiar with the mobile food shelf kind of movement? Okay. So one of the things that we found, and we've worked closely with some food shelves in Minnesota, and most of what I'm going to be talking about today is really geared towards our experience in Minnesota. Maybe I said that earlier. But there is a whole new array of legal issues that comes up when you put a food shelf on wheels. And so food shelves, I think, are really familiar with food safety, food handling, food distribution practices. But when you put that on a vehicle, then all of a sudden these agencies have to deal with vehicle licensing, vehicle classification issues, and then also driver's licensing. Like, do you need a commercial driver's license? Do you have to do a drug and alcohol test for your driver if the vehicle is a certain weight or a certain classification? And so it's this whole learning curve that food shelves are trying to navigate. And one of the challenges, too, is that sometimes the regulatory agencies don't know what to do with these new models either. And so we've worked with some food shelves that, you know, they'll talk to somebody at the Department of Transportation that says, you need to go talk to somebody else in this other office. And then that person, they just get kind of bounced around. And nobody is going to give them an answer about what they need to do to get their truck that they just bought and they reconfigured to add a cooler and took out the maybe the vehicle was a bus and they took out all the seats so that it was just more of a truck, but they still had a couple of seats there, and depending on how many passengers you have, the vehicle might be classified in a different way. And I mean, there's just all these different issues that come up, and it's a really interesting model and has a lot of potential, but I think that there's a learning curve for food shelves when they are pursuing this new distribution model, and it's just good to keep that in mind, because anticipating some of these legal issues before, for example, an operation purchases the vehicle or figures out a staffing plan or a budget for their operation is really important to make sure that they're as successful as possible. Another area that is receiving, I think, increased attention at several state levels. I think Oregon has a law providing tax incentives to increase donation of healthy food directly from producers. Iowa has a new law that I know of. And then Minnesota also just recently appropriated some money directly to fund farmers harvesting and support farmers harvesting food to donate to food banks or food shelves, because there's a cost associated to a farmer just from harvesting the crop, not even talking about their, you know, selling the product. And so by helping to pay the farmers for the cost of harvesting the food that could go to waste in their field otherwise, and encouraging them to then donate it directly to needy populations, these tax incentives can really go a long way to helping harness what otherwise might go to waste. And so this is something I think is really encouraging, and states are kind of exploring different ways of how to effectively manage that kind of program. Another area that we've seen interest from the community level is there's a number of churches and other institutions that are having community gardens and partnering with different food shelves or domestic violence shelters, other social service agencies, and harvesting food from their community garden to donate to these social service agencies. Unfortunately, there have been legal issues at this one. This is a garden shot in St. Paul, just to the left, on the left photo, where this was a community garden that was started in a church front yard. But unfortunately, the church didn't realize, like, they were in a historically zoned area, and there were all these requirements about what kind of landscaping requirements there were for the front yard, as opposed to the manicured lawns, you know, and certain fencing requirements and things. And so they started this food shelf, this community garden tip for, I think it was a domestic violence shelter, and they found themselves having a complaint filed by the Historic Society and in front of the city council, having to ask for a variance, and it was a very contentious issue. And because they were, and it was a really nice garden. I mean, like, they had been very conscientious, but they didn't fit the specific requirements in the local regulation. And they managed to get a variance and worked through it, but it really derailed their efforts for a season and created this community conflict. And so they just didn't see it coming. And so this is just as an example about how even the most seemingly innocuous efforts can create issues from a legal perspective. I'm going to go quickly because I'm starting to run out of time. Another area that some food shelves and food banks are exploring is around nutrition standards and trying to encourage their donors to donate food that meets certain nutrition standards to really emphasize more produce, dairy, lean meats, and proteins and things. And I think that it's a great effort, but the implementation of it has been really difficult for some food shelves to manage, both from if you start having more fresh produce and you need refrigeration and just some quality control, and also just making sure that they're able to consistently implement that and communicate that with their donors. So I think that this is a really great effort, but there still is a real learning curve, I think, about how to do that effectively. Food dating is another issue that comes up a lot because there's a lot of confusion about what those dates on your food actually mean. And this is an area where both from the donor's perspective, the food shelf's perspective, and the clients of the food shelf could come together to really perhaps explore some different policy options to address food dating so that there's consistency in what the dates mean and people understand whether an expired date really means that the food is not fit for human consumption. My time is up, but I'm going to quickly go through the last couple of slides. Another area that food shelves are interested in exploring is providing food preparation demonstrations and food sampling of some healthy foods to their clients, just to build food skills, increase the capacity of their clients to learn how to prepare foods that they may not be familiar with. But unfortunately, they've run into some regulatory barriers from needing a commercial kitchen, which is very cost prohibitive, and having some restrictions from the regulatory agencies as to whether or not they can serve prepared foods in that kind of a setting. And so there's some interesting conversations going on about that, I know in Minnesota and in some other places. And then I think I mentioned this earlier, sometimes this is a subsidized grocery store. It's an old Metro Transit bus that was refitted to be a grocery store in St. Paul. It's a really great effort. It highlights just healthy food and it's subsidized food, but sometimes the regulatory agencies, again, don't know what kind of license should be issued for this type of an establishment. Is it a food truck? Is it a food, like a grocery store on wheels? Like who licenses it? Who inspects it? And so sometimes these establishments have to get multiple licenses from every type of license under the sun just so that they can operate because nobody really knows what to do with them. And then the final issue has to do with partnership agreements that have to do with the relationship. Earlier I talked about the food banks as kind of the food aggregation center that then distributes food to food shelves. And sometimes for a food shelf to get donations from the food bank, they have to enter into a partnership agreement, agreeing that they're just going to donate the food, for example, to low-income residents, that they're not going to sell the food, you know, just some different kinds of requirements. And sometimes the partnership agreements include some restrictions on what food shelves can do with the food, and especially with fresh produce that can be a problem for getting the fresh produce to the clients that need it. So that's another thing that people are really trying to struggle with, or really trying to navigate. So there's a lot of information, and what I was trying to do is just give you some examples of different issues that are coming up, just to highlight for you how you just need to be aware as you're thinking about ways to increase access to healthy food for really vulnerable populations, to make sure that you consider the legal policy implications so that you don't get caught in some of these issues that can derail those efforts.